It's Thursday, the 5th of November, 2015. Happy birthday to Trey Lyles, Jan Mahinmi, and OJ Mayo. And welcome to the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Monster Podcast, brought to you by moneyball.com.au and Andrew132676. And if you want to be like Andrew132676, all you need to do to sponsor one episode of the podcast is leave a review on iTunes. So big thanks to Andrew for doing that and helping the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Monster Podcast climb up the rankings. And also a big shout out to moneyball.com.au, Australasia's first daily fantasy sports site. Tomorrow they've got their biggest NBA tournament to date, which are, you know, when you compare it to the stuff that's happening on FanDuel and DraftKings, it's not that big. But for us, just in the infancy of daily fantasy down here, they've got a $4,000 tournament running tomorrow, which is not bad. You know, the entry sizes are a lot smaller. I think it's only 300 entrants in that, and you got a chance at there's a $4,000 worth of prizes. So make sure you're joining all the Red Rock contests on Moneyball, plus the $4,000 Friday bank contest that moneyball.com.au is running out there. Now, today what we're doing is covering the 10 games from Wednesday. We're previewing the 5 games from Thursday. And of course, when I say we, I am not just talking about myself. I'm not two people, as much as some people seem to think, considering they think that I'm up 24 hours a day. But instead, I'm joined by someone who is literally up 24 hours a day, Seth Klein. Seth, how are you going?
Doing well, thanks. I'm glad you let everyone know when I'm sleeping.
Well, that doesn't happen, so we're fine with that, because you are up at all hours of the day, talking fantasy sports, fantasy basketball, fantasy football, fantasy baseball. Just need to get you into some fantasy NASCAR, and we'll be right.
And I don't think that will ever happen, but I'm having my first child in a week or two. So the sleep, is it possible to have negative sleep? I may open like some sort of black hole in the time space continuum where I actually get negative sleep.
At least the fact that you don't sleep, it's not going to be too much of an impact on your life, because you're going to be up anyway. And before, you're up proposing trades, and now you're going to be up, you know, feeding babies.
That's true. I'm prepared.
Exactly. Now, Seth, remind everyone where, A, they can find you on Twitter, and B, where they can find your fantasy basketball musings.
You can find me on Twitter at Seth Da Sportsman, SethDaSportsman. See, I'm already tired. I can't even spell my name. Like Josh said, I'm on 24/7 answering questions. I try to get to every single question. I try not to leave any out. So follow me on there, and you can follow my writing at thefantasyfix.com. I do an injury report every week there. I do my DFS 2 a week. I do Wednesday and Friday DFS value plays at fantasydraft.com. I'm a member of the All-Star 5 basketball team with Josh and three other amazing fantasy basketball guys over there. I am a contributor, well, for fantasy football, not basketball, at fantasyguru.com. And I am, and where else? And you can also, I just wrote a course at Roto Academy, their offshoot of Roto Grinders. I wrote a course over there that you can purchase. I basically discuss the effects that home and away games have on DFS statistics, road trips, time zones, and everyone's favorite. I really went deep into analysis on revenge games. Is it a true thing, myth, fact? You can purchase that over there. I think it's like $6 or something like that.
Cool. So everybody go. Basically, you can find Seth everywhere. He's all over the place. From a fantasy point of view, he's got great stuff all the time, and he's always a welcome guest on this show. Now, Seth, we do have 10 games to get to cover. Before we do that, we need to give our player of the night, and that is what we call on the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Monster Podcast, the monstrous line of the night. And as you're the guest, I'm going to let you go first. Who was your monstrous line of the night?
Well, my monstrous line of the night actually went to Dwight Howard.
Okay.
A little bit surprised with this line. 10 for 10 from the floor, 23 points, 14 rebounds, six of them were on the offensive end. You know, he's not going to do great for the line. 3 for 7, not the worst thing for his standards. It was 4 of 7 last game. And actually, you know, with that volume, he's not killing you in free throw. It's not a complete punt when he's only shooting 14, you know, 50% on 14 shots. But he played 31 minutes. Hit 35 minutes last game. They're always saying that he may not play back to backs, but if you own him, you've got to be pretty happy with 100% field goal percentage for the night and playing decent minutes.
He was great. I'm going to disagree with you on one thing though, Seth. You said that his free throws and the volumes isn't a complete punt. I would say that it is. He's 50% on the season at 5.3 attempts. That's a Z score, a standard score of -3.09, which is not. It's not great. It's definitely not his worst, and it's a lot better than he has been throughout stages of his career, because his volume is much less. But it's still. No, you know what? It is somewhat balanced. Look, James Harden doesn't give you that sort of number, but if you've got two decent free throw shooters, maybe you can become average. But you think it's going to regress. His attempts are going to... He's half the attempts that he was taking last year. And that's where the big change is. His shooting hasn't improved. But he's,
no.
His attempts are way down. And that's... You know, he's playing four less minutes a game, so there's something to do there. So maybe I'll retract that you're wrong there. But he's...
Well, I was just... yeah, obviously, if... You know, I'm thinking that you're hopefully pairing him with a couple of guys that can shoot in the 80s, you know, and... Where you know you're not going to be in if it's a roto league, you're not going to be last with free throws, at least like you said for now. But
at
you know
moment,
the volume
yeah.
could increase.
Yeah, that's at the moment. So we say that, and don't go out and trade for Howard and go, yeah, I think I can absorb his free throws, because it'll probably get worse, and then you're really in a lot of trouble, because once he gets 7-8 attempts, it's all over. You can't recover from that. At 4 attempts, yes, it's doable, assuming you've got this team that's built specifically around it. If it gets to 7 attempts, forget it. There's no chance of being able to overcome what Dwight Howard does to your free throw percentage in that at that sort of volume. Now, my monstrous line of the night, Seth, goes to Steph Curry yet again. 31 points for Steph. He hit another 7 threes, had 5 rebounds, 4 assists, 1 steal. Wasn't his best performance, but when you're hitting 7 threes and going 31, 5, and 4, and that's probably your worst performance of the season, it says a fair bit about how he's going at the moment in terms of the way that he's playing. He is now averaging, he's dropped his season average down to 36 points a game and 5.6 threes he's at. Still pretty decent, I would say. 5 rebounds, 5.8 assists, 2.2 steals, shooting 57 and 95 is percentages. He is far and away the best player in fantasy basketball. He is far and away the best player in the NBA. Is there any disagreement from you?
Absolutely none. I mean, I watched the end of that game. I'm in LA, and it's just like he was barely, you know, at one point in the game, I don't think he had hit any non-three-pointers, but it was just draining. I think I tweeted something out a little bit earlier where he has more three-pointers than like 5 or something other teams combined. I'm just like, wow. It's like he's, you know, he's getting better. And he's at that age where he's – entering his prime, and it's scary. It really is. And that team is just scary good.
Oh, they took any talk of them being lucky last year, they took it personally, and so they should have, because they are just flat out destroying everybody. And the way they're playing at the moment, you just think, who can, no one can even come close. Like, the Clippers are a pretty good team, and you know, they did all right, but the Warriors had such a big lead on them early that the Warriors can just, nobody can guard this team. Nobody can stop Steph. I don't care who they are. He's going to have an off night, and today was an off night by his standards, but he's still 31, 5, and 4 with 7 threes. That's still not, you know, that hasn't been his best performance. And for nearly every other player in the league, that is their best performance of the season. For Steph, it's his worst, and he's been a joy to watch. What about the waiver wire line of the night, Seth? Which way did you go there?
I went with Mo Harkless.
Yeah, I did too.
Yeah. I mean, he just stood out to me. 15 points, 10 rebounds, 2 threes, 3 blocks. You know, digging. I did a little more digging on his history. I mean, just the third time in his career he's had 10 or more rebounds. The 10th time he's had 3 or more blocks. But you know, Myers Leonard went out with an injury tonight, and I have discussed on Twitter this week about, you know, he went down with a sprained ankle, but I've discussed his elbow injury, which is the ulnar nerve that's been bothering him. I think some people were misinformed and thought it was a funny bone injury, but he did in fact say that he's had ulnar nerve irritation. And actually, I've experienced that. I've had two surgeries in the last year to repair the ulnar nerve in my elbow. And I can tell you that prior to the surgeries, I had pain running down my forearm. Actually, don't really even feel it in the elbow itself. It was running down my forearm, into my hand, numbness, tingling, and pain. So I'm not sure what level of how far he is into the injury or whatever, but if, you know, even if it's at a minimum, you get numbness in your fingers, and you're talking about a player that relies on his 3-point shooting for most of his fantasy value. You know, that's a player that now with a sprained ankle, it's someone you may have to drop. And Mo Harkless is coming in here playing more minutes. I mean, Gerald Henderson's going to be back at some point, but he's played 29 minutes tonight. He had 28 minutes two games ago. They declined his option, Portland. So he's going to be a free agent, and, you know, he's motivated. He wants to get paid. Still only 22 years old, was great in college, only played 1 year. And so, you know, and we know that Jacques Vaughn really gave him no chance in Orlando.
Jacques Vaughn killed him last year.
Yeah, so I really think that with more minutes, he can do well. I mean, he only played 1 year at St. John's, but averaged almost 16 points, 9 rebounds, 1.6 steals, 1.4 blocks. Was not a good 3-point shooter, yet he's hitting them now. So I think with minutes, he could be a decent guy. Maybe, I mean, injuries withstanding to other players, if he got 25 minutes a game, I think he could be a 10-7 type of guy, 10-6 guy with a three. So deep league guys, owners should certainly be looking at him.
Yeah, that's the question I think people are going to want to know is, do I add him in a 10 or a 12 team league? And I would say probably not. Like, I'm a big Mo Harkless fan. I was stunned by the way that Orlando didn't use him last year. I thought he had a real chance to being a sleeper player last season. He got completely killed by Vaughn. It was a massive steal for Portland to get him, and Portland valued him significantly. I know that they wanted him, and they wanted him to play pretty decent minutes, and they've done that so far. But I don't think that he's going to have enough minutes for us to consider him for 12 team leagues. Yeah, he's going to be okay. He'll be a steals guy, get some blocks, hit some threes, be decent, but there's not enough sexiness there for him in a 12 team league where I think you need to go out and add him. Now, it depends. If you're holding onto some piece of crap like David Lee, and Mo Harkless is a guy that you're interested in, drop David Lee and grab Mo Harkless. Myers Leonard, the injury, the ankle sprain here, and the arm issue, the nerve issue, as you detailed, Seth. Leonard, like I've been saying, that we want to keep holding onto him, but now it's, look, if there's someone else there out there that you want, I don't think many people are going to rush and grab Myers Leonard if he's sitting on the waiver wire, if you do happen to drop him. So if there is someone you really want, I'm okay with Leonard being dropped at this point. Where are we? We are now about to talk the young gun of the night, and that is, for me, Jahlil Okafor, who was he was impressive yet again. I can't say any other way around it. He was 21-6, two blocks, and I think probably the biggest thing standing out to me with Okafor, which I was not expecting at all, is he is hitting his free throws at a huge rate. He's at 81% from the line on 4 attempts. He's at 55% from the field on almost 15.5 attempts. He's averaging 20 points a game. The thing that's a bit disappointing is he's only getting 5 rebounds. That should start to come up. But Okafor has been fantastic this year. What have you made of Okafor's start to the season? Are his free throws, is it realistic?
Well, no, I don't think that good. But in the low to mid 70s, definitely. I've been impressed so far. I mean, he's in the right spot to produce. I mean, they have nobody besides him and Noel and, you know, Stauskas and guys like that. And he's going to get a lot of minutes, a lot of playing time. They're not afraid to play him when they're behind, which a lot of teams don't do with their big men. And, I mean, I think he's limited right now. I mean, he's the guy you want to own, but if you look across the board, I mean, he's not rebounding. He's not stealing the ball. He's not blocking shots. He's like scores and scoring and percentages right now. So, you know, he's like a 7 foot tall Kevin Martin without the 3 point shooting and free throws. It's like 20 points per game and nothing else. So interesting guy, but he's not going to help you in a lot of categories.
No, that's the thing. People will see 20 points and get really excited. But what I think will happen is his free throws will come down. His rebounding will go up from the 5.5. And the free throws, I don't know what to make of it because he was really poor in college. I think he shot 55% in college. In summer league, he was terrible at free throws as well. But in the preseason, he hit 89%. And here he's shooting 81% so far through his four first regular season games. I don't know which one's real. Is it the full season of college poor production? Is it the poor summer league? Or is it the really good start to the season? And you'd have to think that it's somewhere in between. Is it close to the 80s in the 70s? Or is it close to the 50s? So is he shooting 60%? It's hard for me to imagine he's made a 30% leap since summer league in his free throw shooting when he had all of last season and wasn't able to do it in his season at Duke. It seems unrealistic to me that he is going to be an 80% shooter after seeing, you know, a whole year of him not being able to do that. And then all of a sudden, yeah, now he's not even a good free throw shooter, an elite free throw shooter. You're shooting 81% as a big man. That's elite. That's, you know, Brooke Lopez level. That's, I can't even think, you know, Kevin Love, that sort of range of guys. Pau Gasol, those sort of guys. It's elite big man free throw shooting. And you can't go from being, you know, Dwight Howard to Brooke Lopez in the span of 2 months. It doesn't make sense. Something has got to give. Look, I could be completely wrong, but I would think, okay, why has he never done that before throughout his whole, you know, season in college? Why was he not able to do it at all in what he did through summer league? It just doesn't make a huge amount of sense. I imagine that comes down, the rebounding goes up, but the steals and blocks and the low assist, that's going to be what it is. He's not going to be a 1.5 to 2 block guy. He's not going to get big steals. He's not going to be an assist guy. He's definitely not going to hit any threes. So all that stuff's going to stay what it is, and he's going to be that limited around that, you know, rank 100 sort of value because he's going to be points, rebounds, and field goal percentage most likely. That's the way it appears to me. Who was your young gun of the night if it wasn't Jahlil Okafor?
I had a feel this is sort of a cheat a little bit because he's still, I think, 22 years old, but I did Bradley Beal, still young. So, but game winning 3-pointer, if you saw the highlights of that, it was just, and you saw the highlights, you heard the announcing, and it was a dagger. The announcer kept saying it was a dagger, and it was, and they beat a really good team tonight, and 25 points. He's averaging 25 points and 3.5 threes. Another guy that doesn't really do much across the board besides that. You know, he adds a few boards and a couple assists, but impressive so far with his scoring over 20 points each game. And he was a guy I was a little down on this year, more so for his ADP, but so far proven me wrong. And Washington looks like they have a little bit of a nice core there. And, you know, talk today about Kevin Durant possibly going there, and we heard that last year, but it's they're talking about it again, and man, that would be a pretty great team. I don't know if it would be better than Oklahoma City, but Durant, Wall, Porter, Beal, that's a pretty nice core right there.
Yeah, absolutely. I've obviously got a long way to go to see that with Kevin Durant. The thing about Beal that's interesting to me is he's taking this huge field goal percentage leap. He's gone up from, you know, 43 last year, and he's up at 48 at the moment. Now, it occasionally happens. Like a guy like Jimmy Butler took a big jump in his field goal percentage, but the thing that I'm a bit worried with Beal is he's taking 20 shots a game. So if he regresses back to a 44% shooter, he goes from being, you know, a break-even field goal percentage guy, because, you know, 47 to 48% is that break-even level, and it doesn't matter how many shots you're taking if you're at a break-even level. But if that drops down to 43 at 20 attempts, we're talking almost Kobe level in negative impact on your field goal percentage. If you believe that you're going to stick with this sort of 6% shooting in his field goal, which he could, again, it happens occasionally. But if it doesn't, and he's using the ball as much as he is, it's going to be a big hit to your team. So just pay attention to that. He's also hitting almost 3.5 threes a game, which is well up on anything he's been able to do in his career. 1.7 last year. We're talking double what he's been able to do there. So his scoring is up 10 points a game. His threes are doubled. His field goal percentage is well up. If that comes down, the points will come down, the threes will come down, and he will start to regress. So currently in 9-cat leagues, he's ranked inside the top 30. Is that a sell high moment for Brad Beal for you?
Yeah, I think so. I wouldn't mind selling him, you know, even for maybe a guy like Reggie Jackson or something where you can actually get some assists out of the position. they're probably going to end up having similar shooting percentages. Beal is averaging 23.3 points a game right now. If you look at last year's playoffs, he averaged 23.4 in last year's playoffs, but he shot 40.5% from the field. Yep. So, big difference. Yeah, I mean, scoring is the same, but it's not going to be an 8% difference in shooting percentage. So, yeah, I agree with you where I think that's going to, you know, a good year would be him getting down to 44%, 45%. That would be a huge improvement over his career.
Yeah, I think 45 is the aim for him, 45 to 46, and that's still good, but it's still a negative impact on such a big volume of shots, which can hurt you. So just, I don't imagine he's sticking at 48, because if he did shoot 48 at 20 attempts and get that scoring up, that's, they're fantastic numbers. It can happen, but just be a little bit wary of that. And I think that if you can get a top 30 player back for Brad Beal, I know in one of our listener leagues, Seth, someone traded Brad Beal and got Klay Thompson back, which I thought was a pretty decent deal. And that's really selling high and buying low at the same time.
Sell high and buy low. Yeah,
yeah. That's perfect. And look, at the moment, Beal is clearly outplaying Thompson. But again, is this sustainable? It feels like there's probably a 10% chance that it is sustainable, but 90% chance that it regresses, maybe not to last year, and probably not to last year, but down enough for it drops him 20, 30 spots in the rankings. What about the dud of the night, Seth? Who do you look at there and go, this guy was owned in most leagues and gave us the worst performance?
My dud of the night, and almost for the season right now, it was Joe Johnson. He had 5 points on 1 of 10 shootings, 6 rebounds, 6 assists is okay, but not when you're going 1 for 10. He's only averaging 8.4 points on the season and shooting 28% from the field, making just 6 3-pointers a game. He's contributing some assists and rebounds, but this is a guy that nobody should be owning in any league. I'm talking about if you're in 16 team leagues, he's still hurting you. So the name alone, it doesn't matter, because he's killing your field goal percentage. He's only scoring 8.4 points a game. And the best thing, of course, is he's still the second highest paid player in the NBA this season. Yep. Just under $25 million he's making this season, behind Kobe Bryant, who's another guy that is a dud this season. And man, they're combining for $50 million and shooting like a combined 30% from the field. It's just funny, these teams that give money to these players like that. But yeah, Joe Johnson's contract is always going to go down as one of the worst in the NBA ever.
Can I throw out a bit of a contrarian opinion to that, Seth, in that you said that he's not worth being owned in those leagues? Yes, at the moment. But as a flip side to what Brad Beal's doing, he's shooting 28%. Like, he is not going to shoot 28% for the season. You would have to think that he is going to get back up and shoot 40, 41, 42%. Everything else that he's doing is basically the same as last year. 4.8 rebounds last year, 4.6 this year, 3.7 assists last year, 3.8 this year, 0.7 steals, 0.4 steals, 80% from the free throw, 82% from the free throw line. All the numbers are the same. The only thing that's down are his threes, his scoring, and his field goal percentage. And he's down a whopping 15% on his field goal percentage. If that goes back up 10, 11%, his scoring rises, his threes rise, and then his numbers look pretty similar to last year. And I don't think that, how often have we ever seen someone go through the season shooting 28% from the field?
Well, never.
The answer is pretty much never. You know, yeah. Look, even if he gets to 40%, which he was 44 last year, even if he gets to 40 and he's averaging 12, 4.5, and 4 with a 3 a game at 40% and 82 from the line, I reckon that has value. I think that he's going to regress back to the mean. From this, he's not going to be this bad. And the thing that I like is that, yes, the minutes are still there and every other stat is still exactly where it was.
No, I agree. His usage is down, though.
But is it? He's shooting 10.6 attempts versus 12.8 last year. It's not that much different.
No, that's true. I it depends the league. A roto league, yeah, you could keep him on your bench and wait it out, but if I'm even in a 16-team, 14-team head-to-head, I mean, this is not a player that I can – with a three guys in a league like a standard Yahoo league where you're three guys on your bench, I mean, this is not a player I can keep running out every single game. He's hurting me more. And even in a 16-team league, I don't mind going out and grabbing – you know, there's players that are producing. There's Courtney Lees. There's – Mo Harkless's. There's guys that can win me can win me categories this week and next week, as opposed to maybe waiting a couple of weeks for Joe Johnson to get his shit together.
Yeah. No, look, I understand that point of view. I own him in 112 team league, and I am holding him in that league because I always think to myself, yeah, I'm probably going to cop a loss in the first couple of weeks while I wait for some of this stuff to normalize. And I look at these things like Trent's. Is he taking shots? Is his field goal percentage way down? Is that what's causing the problem? Or are all the other numbers making sense? And yes, they are. And I think that there will be some sort of a bounce back from Joe Johnson. He's never going to be great again, but he's going to be serviceable enough. And yeah, there's 4 assists from a shooting guard, almost 5 rebounds is pretty useful, plus a high free throw percentage. So I don't want to get bogged down too much about talking about Joe Johnson, but that's, yeah, so a couple of differing thoughts there on him. My dart of the night, Seth, is Robin Lopez of the New York Knicks. He wasn't great. He played 28 minutes, which is okay. 6 points, 4 rebounds, 2 assists, and went 3 of 9 from the field. No steals, no blocks. He's been a bit hit and miss this year. He's at 10 points a game, 4.6 rebounds, which is really, really poor for a center. A block, 0.2 steals, 47%, which is not a great percentage considering he was at 57 last year. Hasn't missed a free throw yet, but on such a small volume. What are you doing with Robin Lopez? He was putrid last season. Pretty much all year, he was not good. What are you making of what we're seeing from him in New York at the moment?
He's not off to a great start, and I'm a Knicks fan, so certainly not happy with the immediate returns. But I think he bounces back. He's definitely the de facto center there. O'Quinn's still only playing about 18, 19 minutes. Serafine's really a non-factor. So he's getting the minutes. I think that offense is still dominated by Carmelo Anthony. We have guys like Galloway, doing well. And so the offense may not be where people were hoping in the 14 to 15 point range, maybe. But I still think towards, come the end of the season, he could easily be a 12-9 type of guy with more than a block a game, and he does shoot well from the line like his brother. He shoots well from the field. He's not a high-end guy, but he's a safe guy.
Yeah, and
he's a guy that I don't mind as my third center on a team or second center on a team because he's really not going to hurt you anywhere.
I think there's a real risk he doesn't finish inside the top 100, but he finished inside the top 120, so that sort of range. So yeah, I'm still definitely persisting with him if I do own him, and I do own him. Now, Seth, that's all of the nightly awards out of the way. We've got 10 games to get into it in a little bit more detail. So as Michael Bolton says, it didn't work. Oh, how did this sound queued up? Let's try it again. As Michael Bolton says,
oh man,
it's coming. As Michael Bolton says,
let's get to it.
There we go. And if anyone doesn't know what that's from Michael Bolton in the Jack Sparrow video by Lonely Island. And it's always, whenever I go to say this on the podcast, I always go, let's get into it, let's get to it. And I always have Michael Bolton in my head saying that. So I eventually got the sound and then stuffed it up. So that will be a little bit neater the next time that I go
to
do it.
That's one of my all-time favorite videos.
How good is
hilarious.
It? How good is it? And that's
it's great, but like the song's great, but then when you watch it with the video and you see how upset Andy Samberg is and all those guys when he keeps going off track and singing about Pirates of the Caribbean when they're in this club and they're just like, what? Come on, man. It's just awesome. I love it.
So that's what's always in my head when I hear Michael Bolton. When I hear someone say, let's get to it. It's always Michael Bolton saying that with that little bit of echo. Let's have it again for effect.
Let's get to it.
Thank you, Michael. The first game we're going to talk about, Seth, is the Spurs and the Washington Wizards. Kawhi Leonard was on fire to start the game. He did slow down, 23-9, and not many other peripheral stats from Kawhi, but at this stage, it's pretty hard to see him not being a top 10 player for the rest of the year. Tony Parker, okay, I want to get your thoughts on Tony Parker, Seth. He's had two pretty decent games in a row, 17 points here, 2 rebounds, 4 assists, and a steal. A lot of people were calling for him to be dropped in 12-team leagues, and I was sort of okay with it, but he's bounced back a little bit. What's your take on Parker for this season?
It's one of those guys that's sort of on the fringe of being owned, on the fringe of being not owned. 10-team leagues, definitely not. But 12-team, I've seen him dropped in a couple of my leagues, seen him picked up for a couple of games and dropped again. Definitely a guy that he's just not going to overwhelm. He's the days of the 30-point games are over. He's not going to probably have more than a handful of games with 8-plus assists. He's not going to hit threes, not going to steal the ball. Certainly a good streamer. If they've got the Spurs have a a favorable schedule on a certain week, or they have four or five games in a week, definitely a guy you pick up. But their team is just so deep. If you're looking at the box score right now, you can see all the minutes that everybody's getting. Boris Diaw, Patty Mills with 21 minutes. I mean, look, when Patty Mills and Ginobili combined for 42 minutes, and Parker played 30, it's just those are two other guys playing a similar position that just he's just not going to get the looks, and he happened to get it tonight because Aldridge wasn't really shooting the ball well. But yeah, I don't think he's a guy I want to say rest of the season he must be owned. Pick him up if he's there, but if he has a couple bad games, there should be no reason not to drop him.
Yeah, look, that's it. He can be on and off wise, but he's not to be someone where you're just dropping him for no reason in a 12-team league, because he's going to have some value. Patty Mills is not going to take 30 minutes of starting point guard work away from him. Ray McCallum isn't either. And as much as Tony Parker has declined, he's still better than both of those guys at doing what he does. He's definitely not a top-end fantasy guy, but just don't completely write him off. LaMarcus Aldridge, 10-14 with some bad shooting. Yeah, I've been railing against LaMarcus Aldridge as a top 20 player pretty much all offseason, and it looks like that's going to be the case this year. He's not someone I'm advocating buying low on, because I think this is pretty much it with him. How do you see him?
Yeah, I agree with you. He was a guy I had out of my top 30 or so. I saw him getting drafted 10th, 11th. It's like, this isn't Portland anymore. He's not the main guy. We know how the Spurs work around the scoring and the minutes and all that, and I think he's fine with that. In Portland, he wanted the ball, he wanted to be shooting the ball, it's just not going to be the case. Sure, he's going to have some big games, but definitely not going to be a guy that there's no way he's going to average probably anywhere more than 16, 17 points per game this year.
Yeah, I think that's pretty accurate. I obviously don't want much to do with LaMarcus Aldridge this season. Danny Green sort of got back on track, hit three threes and had a block for 12 points, but his shooting was still poor. If someone dropped him, you need to make sure that he's picked up. For as poor as he's been, again, he hit three threes, he had 12 points and a block, so he's still doing enough in some of these games. We're still yet to see the big breakout, but he's doing more than I think that you give him than what people might give him credit for. On the Wizard side of things, Seth, John Wall, 17 points, 13 assists, 4 steals and a block. He's had a great start to the season. We covered Brad Beal. Otto Porter with 38 minutes, 19 points, 2 rebounds, 2 assists. He went 8 of 10 from the field. He's not going to do that again. Otto Porter is a must-own 12-team league guy.
Yeah, I think so. In 12-team,
I agree with that. And Chris Humphries isn't. Now, he's still starting, but he played 23 minutes, 7-6 with a 3. He started off the season with a couple of big games, and he's definitely floundered since then. We don't need Chris Humphries in anything outside of maybe those 16-team leagues you were talking about earlier. What do you make of the slow start from Marcin Gortat? 10-8 with a block in 28 minutes. A lot of people are a bit disappointed with him. Are you making anything of it?
Not really. I tweeted about it earlier tonight. We're in a couple leagues together, but in the league I'm the commissioner of, you may have seen that trade I made prior to the season where I got Gortat and obviously disappointed with a start, but another guy that, like Robin Lopez, he's really not going to end up hurting you anywhere. We're still early in the season. He's going to be pretty consistent, and I can almost guarantee he'll probably finish right around where he did last year, which is about 13, 14 points per game, 7-8 rebounds, more than a block, maybe even better. That's probably where he'll end up going. He did start last year very slow as well and really picked it up towards the middle of the season. So I expect the same, another good solid year out of Gortat.
Yeah, I'm not really panicking on him either. Yes, he has started slow, but he's not providing nothing for you. He hasn't been as good as what you probably were hoping for when you drafted him, but he definitely hasn't been bad by any stretch. I'm not too worried about Gortat at this point. Not much else to really talk about from the Wizards' point of view in terms of their fantasy relevance. The next game, Boston and Indiana. And Seth, I'll throw this out there and I'll speak on your behalf. Let's avoid all Boston big men at this point in standard leagues. Would you agree?
Yeah.
It's just a messy situation. I do like the fact that they went with Amir Johnson and Jared Sullinger as their starters. That is the starting lineup that I thought they would go with at the start of the season. And then they went with this stupid David Lee, Tyler Zeller situation. And I mentioned the other day on the pod, Seth, that I'm disappointed with myself because I was so down on David Lee coming into the season. I was like, do not draft him anywhere. Don't want anything to do with him. He's done. He's cooked. He's finished. And then in the preseason, they said, yeah, David Lee, he's our starter. He's playing minutes. We're going to run stuff through him. I went, oh, okay. Well, if he's going to do that and he's going to play 28 minutes and he's going to look sort of how he did in preseason, I'm on board. He's just been garbage again, much like he was last year. I feel like he is done in the league. Amir Johnson and Jared Sullinger are the two best bets. If we know that Sullinger is getting 28 minutes to 38 minutes a night, he's a must-own player. But we can't guarantee that at this point. And he was good today, 9 and 11, 2 steals, 2 blocks. He hit a 3. He's got a really fantasy-friendly game. But there's just, look, if you want to take a risk on it and go, you know what, I'll ride it out for a week, Sullinger he's got more fantasy upside than Amir Johnson, more than David Lee, more than Jonas Jerebko, way more than Tyler Zeller. The only other guy who's got close to that is Kelly Olynyk, and he did nothing here today. He's worth somewhat of a look, but geez, it's really hard to rely upon it, isn't it?
Yeah, it's hard to rely upon. I agree about Sullinger. I had him on a couple teams before the season, and when all the news came out and I dropped him, it was just a situation where you're going to add these guys. They may do well for a few games. You're going to end up dropping them again. You're going to add one, and then the other two are going to have good games. And then when you drop the one you added, as soon as you drop him, he's going to have a good game. There's just too many guys that are just mediocre. And I agree, Sullinger is by far the best talent there. But and if he's getting the minutes like he did tonight, sure. But I don't think he will every game. David Lee could easily play 22 minutes next game. Kelly Olynyk, I don't get that. I don't get the why they Stevens just refuses to play him. He's clearly at least one of the top three most talented big men on that team.
I think he's the best. I think he's the most talented big man on that team.
Yeah, it's just shocking that he didn't play at all last year. And I know he was hurt for a little bit, but this is the Sullinger thing to me, though. This reeks of showcasing a player for trade value. He is going to be free agent. They did not pick up his option get the guy some minutes. Hopefully there's a team out there that, you know, we know Danny Ainge, and we know Danny Ainge will wheel and deal and somehow get 2 first round picks out of it. So if he can do that, they're going to play Sullinger and try to get some value out of him.
Yeah, so look, I think the message, I'm probably not adding him anywhere, but if you want to take a risk for it, he has got, yeah, if him and Amir Johnson play the same minutes, Sullinger's the better fantasy player. If he gets anywhere over 25 minutes, that can be useful, but it's just too risky at the moment for me. But again, you might have a spare spot and go, yeah, you know what, I'm just going to take it, have a look at it and see what happens. By all means, go ahead, because you could have on your hands, if for some reason he plays 30 a night, you could have a top 75 player on your hands. There's that possibility. Whereas Johnson doesn't offer that, Lee doesn't offer that, Zeller doesn't offer that, Jerebko doesn't offer that. Sullinger does. So if you want to take a risk, go ahead. Isaiah Thomas got the start with Marcus Smart out with a toe problem. 27 and 7 for Thomas with 4 threes and 2 steals. He's great in 25 minutes, in 27 minutes. He's awesome in 36 minutes. He's got to be happy that if you drafted him, you got a top 20 performance out of a guy tonight. We don't know how long Smart is going to be out for. It doesn't appear to be a serious problem, but Thomas has always got this in him if he gets those big minutes. Avery Bradley went 21-5-3 with 3 threes. That was with a sore hand, so a good night from him. Jay Crowder and Evan Turner. Crowder played 33, went 12-6 with 2 steals, while Turner went 11-4-4 in his best performance of the season. Jay Crowder, to me, is not necessarily a must-own 12-team league guy. I get that he fits in certain situations, but to me, he has limited upside. How do you view Jay Crowder?
I liked him a lot better last year. Okay. I liked him when he was getting a lot of minutes.
I liked him less last year.
What's that?
I liked him less last year. I'm not a fan of Jay Crowder as a player.
I'm not a fan, but I liked his fantasy opportunity more last year. I liked when he wasn't competing with so many people in that front court. He's clearly has the edge over Evan Turner, so that's a good thing. But this Celtics team, they're a fun team, and they made the playoffs last year, albeit in, you know, the Eastern Conference. But as far as fantasy value, I mean, they really only have one player that's worth owning, and that's Isaiah Thomas, yeah. Unless you're in much deeper leagues. Avery Bradley, sure, whatever, but I don't like – Avery Bradley's someone I never own unless I'm streaming him, because he's going to have these good games, and he's going to go out and go, you know, 2 for 9 with zip across the board. And it's just sort of what you get with all these players. There's just so much ambiguity with the minutes in the front court, with the scoring worked around, and most of these guys don't provide much in the form of peripheral stats aside from Thomas.
Yep, and that's right. Back to Crowder, he's averaging 2.5 steals a game this year. That's not going to continue at that rate, so that is inflating his value a little bit. You can add him and get some decent points at 3, some rebounds, but the steals aren't going to stay at 2.5 a game. Well, if they do, I'd be pretty surprised if it happened to stay at that level. RJ Hunter got his first action, and Terry Rozier played 6 minutes, but we don't need to worry about either of those guys unless you're in deep dynasty formats. The Pacers, Paul George, 26-10 with 5 threes, 3 assists, and 2 steals. He looks pretty good. The Pacers were without CJ Miles. They were without Jan Mahinmi. So they went with the starting front court of Jordan Hill and Lavoie Allen. And they both actually had okay games. 16-10 for Jordan Hill, 2 steals. Lavoie Allen, 7 points, 11 rebounds. Allen's always been a really good rebounder. There's only value for them in DFS sort of situations. When Mahinmi and Miles are back, those two guys go back to the bench. Miles Turner is still battling with an ankle problem. Otherwise, he would have got more minutes than his 18 that he got, and that would impact what Lavoie Allen and Jordan Hill can do as well. Monte Ellis, what have you made of his start to his Indiana career? 13-5-8 here with a steal and a 3. You like those numbers. You don't like the field goal percentage. Is this about where Monte Ellis is going to be? Is he going to get better than this?
I think he's going to be better. I don't think he's going to be anywhere close to his Golden State days, but certainly should be averaging more in the scoring department and the assist department, and hopefully that field goal percentage goes up. So it's not a guy that I'm rushing to buy low on, but if you could get someone that's just fed up with a field goal percentage and maybe sell off a hot player, he's a guy I'd be looking to add, because it's got to get at least a little bit better.
Yeah, I agree with that. I don't think that he becomes that top 50 guy, but I think he's better than what he is now. So he's someone that I would be looking to acquire if you can give up, say, you know, 2 of your worst 4 players and get him back in return. I think that's a really good deal for you. Not much else to talk about from the Pacers. George Hill went 10-2-4 with 3 steals. That's his worst game of the year. He shot 2 of 10, so he will be better than that. And again, I still think that George Hill is going to be a real find this year, and a top 50 player when all is said and done. The next game we take a look at is the Toronto Raptors and the Oklahoma City Thunder. Your boy, Seth, DeMar DeRozan, 28 points, 5 rebounds, 3 assists, 2 steals. You have been a well-known DeMar DeRozan hater. What have you made of his start to the season, where he's averaging 22 points, 4.5 rebounds, 4.5 assists, 1.6 steals, shooting 82% from the line on 11 attempts? What have you made of his start to the season?
It's been very good.
It has.
I expect some of those numbers to go down a little bit.
Which ones?
What's that?
Which ones do you expect to go down?
What did you say he was shooting from the field?
42.
Oh, wow. So maybe not. But the assist may go down a little bit, the rebound maybe by one. But yeah, I mean, those are good numbers. Not elite numbers by any means, but I think that's going to put him I'm not as good at the rankings as you are. You're the king on Basketball Monster, but I think those will put him in the top 60. They should, yeah, right?
He's 56th at the moment.
Yeah, there you go. Perfect.
So, and look, you say, look, those numbers, but yeah, he last year, and he was injured, and that, I've mentioned this millions of times speaking in the podcast, he was injured last season for a big stretch, but he was scorching hot down the stretch. And what he did down the stretch last season, he's actually averaging less rebounds than what he did then. So he's at 4.4 versus 5.5 last year. His assists are down slightly, 4.4 to 4.2. His three-pointers are down from 0.8 to 0.4, and his points are down from 23.5 to 22.2. So he's actually less productive than the way he finished last season, and he's still that good. I think a lot of people were really down on DeMar DeRozan and weren't really – they were definitely put off by the overall package that he put up last season. But to me, he's a guy that people will say, yeah, he's pointing, he doesn't shoot threes. But Seth, I'll mention this all the time. I don't care if he doesn't shoot threes, because you know what I'll do? I'll add a power forward who shoots threes, or I just don't care about threes. He fits teams. 4 assists from a shooting guard is valuable. 82% on 11 free throws is significant. Like that's a huge number, and you can't get that late in drafts. I was big on DeMar DeRozan. I got him in quite a few leagues. because I built my team around him in a certain way, but I really liked what he did down the stretch last year, and he's sort of carrying that on. Yeah, he's not a great real-life player. He's got a lot of deficiencies, but he can... Look, people would be surprised at his assist numbers and his rebounding and that high free throw percentage. I think people would be very shocked to see some of those numbers. And then, much like you, you just think, oh, those numbers are going to come down, but they're actually what he does, basically. That's just what he does. He gets 4 and 4 in his rebounds and assists, and I don't think many people really realize that when they look at him on the court, because yeah, he's considered a chucker, and that's fair enough, because he pretty much is. But he still does other things, so I do like what he's able to do out there. So I've been in DeMar DeRozan's camp for quite a while. Jonas Valanciunas, another guy that you've been on a little bit over the course of his career, 17 and 11 with some really good percentages, no blocks, which I'm sure you are very happy with. What's your take on Valanciunas this year? Have you seen improvement?
Yeah, I mean, he's playing a little bit more minutes, and certainly an improvement, I think, in the rebounding department, definitely. But yeah, those blocks for a center, I hadn't looked today, but as of yesterday, it was like 0.33 blocks per game or something. So,
yeah, that's pretty bad.
But yeah, I mean, there's nice value there. He shoots well from the field. He's going to shoot well from the line, and a pretty standard, dare I say, he's a very David Lee-like game circa 2008
I think that's fair enough. He's yeah. 16 and 10 and not much defensive and good field goal. He's shooting 60% from the field and 81% from the line, and they're fantastic numbers. I just want him to get 32 minutes a night, and then he can be an 18 and 11 guy, and then hopefully get a block a game, 1.2 blocks. That would give him value. DeMar Carroll. Let's try that again. Damari Carroll bounced back from a stinker yesterday. He was the dud of the night yesterday. 13 and 7 here with 4 steals. So good to see him back on track. Luis Scola, I stressed it yesterday, Seth. Nobody ran out and picked him up after his 19 and 12. You'd be shocked at how many questions I got. Oh, do I need to add Luis Scola? No, you didn't. And this is why, because he went 2 and 5 today in 19 minutes. Yes, he had a big game.
Someone in one of my leagues did, and I woke up and I saw it, and I was like, oh, man.
No.
I mean, haven't you watched this guy for the last, like, 3 years or anything, or this season?
No.
And I forget who they dropped, but I hope – I want to see who they dropped, but I hope it's no one good. But it was one of those where I almost woke up and was like, oh, they bit into, you know, looking at the box. Well, they didn't drop anyone great. They dropped Jan Mahimi. But still, yeah, certainly. And this is a league, actually, where – we get charged $1 per ad, like real life dollars.
Oh, so, geez, that's a waste of a dollar.
I went out and I added Gorgui Jang for $1, and this guy added Luis Scola. So I'm hoping that, I mean, it can't be worse.
No.
And I added Evan Fournier too.
Same. My boyfriend.
Yeah, $2 for Jang and Fournier. I'll take it over one for Scola.
Definitely. Kyle Lowry was a little bit quieter today, 17 and 4 with two steals and three threes, but we can't complain about him too much. And a rare Patrick Patterson defensive sighting, 2 steals and 2 blocks, but do not get overly excited with that. Onto the Thunder, Kevin Durant, 27, 7 and 4, 2 steals, 3 blocks, 2 threes. It's a pretty decent performance from him. He was really close to getting the monstrous line of the night from me. Well, Russell Westbrook had an NBA high 16 assists to go along with his 22 points with 3 threes, and those two guys just keep on keeping on. What do you make of Enes Kanter? 17 minutes here, 15 and 6 with a 3. He's doing his standard, providing no defensive stats, but his minutes, are they worrying you? Or the fact that he's still producing in limited minutes, are you okay with that?
No, I'm not. And he's one of the guys I've been down on the last few years. I mean, he's just not – he's a good offensive player, but he's one of the worst defensive big men that's come around that in the last 10 years that plays the minutes he does. And he just hurts that team every time he's on the court defensively. And that's why he's playing 16 minutes, 15 minutes, 17 minutes, because Steven Adams is just a better player and defensive player in the post. And when, you know, you got guys like Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook and even Serge Ibaka, you don't need Kanter's offense. Well, why are you going to have a guy in that is going to score 13, 15 points a game when you have two of the top scorers in the NBA? So I think that Billy Donovan, that's what he's doing. He's playing Adams in crunch time because he needs the defensive presence out there. And you look what Adams did tonight, 4 blocks, 7 rebounds. I'll take that over an empty 15 points, you know, on 11 field goal attempts from Cantor.
So Cantor's not a drop guy for me just yet, because the fact that he's averaging still over 10 rebounds and 12 points a game is intriguing. On 55 and 75%, there's still value there, especially in a roto league. But if he's going to continue to get under 20 minutes a game and then, you know, maybe not get to that 12 and 10 sort of level, then yeah, you have to consider dropping it, because yeah, Adams is cutting into his minutes. Big night from Adams. I'm not adding Adams in any 12 team formats or anything like that. His major impact is the impact he's having on Enes Kanter's value. Serge Ibaka, 10 and 6 with 3 blocks. Yeah, a pretty okay night from him, nothing too spectacular. And as per usual, there is nothing else from the rest of the Thunder players. Waiters, Robertson, Singler, Morrow, Augustine, absolutely nothing for us to pay any real attention to. The Knicks and the Cleveland Cavaliers, Kristaps Porzingis, Seth, 21 minutes for Kristaps, 13 points, 4 rebounds, 2 steals, 2 blocks, 1 3, 1 assist. How much are you in love with Kristaps Porzingis?
Well, I'm not officially head over heels, but I certainly love, as a Knicks fan, the way he started the season. You just got to love the way he plays. And you saw that in summer league preseason. The guy just hustles. The range is nice for that size. The defense is good with that wingspan. It's going to be – he's a fantasy-friendly guy to own. I don't think he's going to be a crazy big scorer, but he's combining rebounds with points, threes, some block. The blocks are really nice, and he's shooting really well from the line and getting to the line. And that's huge for a rookie, and I expect those minutes to keep increasing as the season goes along.
He's a must-own player in every league, isn't he?
Yeah.
He's ranked inside the top 70 at the moment in only 23 minutes, 12 and 7.5, half a three, almost 2 steals, 1.2 blocks. And these things aren't necessarily flukes. Maybe he's not going to be at 2 steals a game, but he knows positioning. It took 2 minutes of watching him in his first summer league game to go, you know what, this guy knows what he's doing. And I already knew that because I'd watched, you know, tape of him playing in Spain and read so many scouting reports. And that's why it didn't make sense to me. That's why I was so angry on draft night after the draft and went on a podcast with Kyle. With Kyle McEwen, and we're talking about Stephen A. Smith's ridiculous rant on ESPN after it, and I just went after the Smith so badly on that show because, yeah, he made such a big deal of, you know, I'm calling in for my vacation. Like, you're a dickhead, mate. Have you ever heard of this guy? Have you read anything about him? This guy is a basketball player. He's a professional player. He's an awesome prospect, and there's a massive chance he's the best player. Sorry, rephrase that. Second best player in this draft class when all is said and done. And he showed that the very first second he stepped onto the court at Summer League, you knew he was going to be a really good player. And he's only playing 23 minutes. If he gets up, he's per 36 numbers this year, Seth. 18.7 points, a 3, 11.5 rebounds, almost 3 steals and 2 blocks. Like, they're crazy. Now, he's probably not going to get to 36 minutes at any point in his career, but at 32, you know, 16 and 10, 2 steals, 2 blocks, I'll take it. You can't not take it. He is going to be really, really good. I don't think there's any way you can go.
Stephen A. Smith is a moron.
Yeah, he is. He's a mess.
I wasn't overly, like, I did not like him. At the time, I wanted Moutier, but once we were able to get Jerry and Grant, I was like, all right, we got a good young point guard, and so I was cool with the pick.
Carmelo Anthony, 17 and 12 with 2 blocks and 2 threes. One night away from having, or one game away from having Kawhi Leonard on him, he was able to bounce back, which we sort of anticipated. Langston Galloway, 12 and 4 with 2 steals and 3 threes. Galloway's a guy that 12-team leaguers really do have to pay attention to, don't they?
Yeah, they do. And I tweeted about that a couple nights ago. He's getting the minutes. He's familiar with the system. There aren't a lot of players on that team that are. Aaron Aflalo is supposed to come back this weekend, but it will cut into Galloway's minutes. But for now, you got to add the guy. He's shooting the ball really well and, you know, was a really good rookie last year. He was in the top, one of the top-ranked rookies last year. So, yeah, he's a guy you need to own right now.
I don't think that he cuts into Galloway's minutes at all, really. I think that he takes his minutes basically away from Sasha Vujicic. Who's getting 22 minutes. We've got 22 minutes here tonight. I think Aflalo takes basically all of those. And Galloway might lose a minute or two, but I don't think he takes a wholesale hit and goes down to 20 minutes or anything like that with Aflalo back. I think we see Vujicic moving basically out of the rotation. Well, fingers crossed anyway that that's what happens. Jose Calderon played his biggest minutes of the season, and he was still yuck. 2, 3, and 5. No place for him in leagues outside of 16 teams. Jerian Grant, only 17 minutes, 6 and 2. If you own him in a 12-team league, I'm still holding for a little bit because it appears it's only a matter of time. What the Knicks are going to do, they're going to have to bring a Flalo back and see what happens, and then I reckon they make a change and go, okay, let's put Grant in this starting lineup. They want to see how a Flalo goes with Calderon. It's going to last 2 games before they realize it doesn't matter who's playing against Jose Calderon. It's not going to change Jose Calderon. So Grant is a guy that I'm holding for a couple of weeks. Would you recommend that, or would you be move on from Grant and grab him later?
I recommend it. Assists are really hard to come by. It's probably the hardest thing to come by, in my opinion, as the season goes on the waiver wire. So he's worth holding, and I agree with you. Calderon's just awful, and he cannot play defense, and he can't even shoot anymore. So he really has no value except for his experience. Grant will be the point guard at some point, and that's going to be valuable on this team.
Onto the Cavs, Mo Williams, 22-6-4. He must be owned everywhere. Tristan Thompson grabbed 13 rebounds with 10 points. A lot of people are owning him in 10 and 12 team leagues. I don't really agree with that. You can stream him in for rebounds, and at this point, he's more valuable than Timofey Mozgov, which was basically the case for majority of last season. But I don't think we need to add him in 12 team leagues, do we?
No, not right now. No, not while Tristan Thompson and all those guys are healthy.
LeBron James, 23-5-3 with 4 steals, a block and a three. A good night from LeBron. And Kevin Love, bit of a quieter night. His shot wasn't falling. 11-12 with 2 threes. Richard Jefferson made the start in place of J.R. Smith, who's out for at least the next game as well with that knee issue. 9-4-3 for Jefferson. And Matthew Dellavedova, another big assist night for Dellavedova, led the team in assists with 7. Are you looking, if you want short-term assists, is Dellavedova worth looking at? I think that's 26 assists. Definitely. 26 assists in the last 3 games for Dellavedova. It's you don't expect that too often from him, but I wouldn't have expected it from him too often. But he's done it the last 3 games. So if you're looking for a short term boost in assists, he's worth looking at least while J.R. Smith is out of the lineup. The next game we take a look at is the Philadelphia 76ers and the Milwaukee Bucks. The talk of fantasy basketball Twitter today, Seth, was TJ McConnell, who got the start over Isaiah Cannon, played 35 minutes, went 7, 9, and 12. This is TJ McConnell. He is going to be big assist. He's going to be a good rebounder. He's going to offer you basically nothing else. What are you doing? Is he a must-add guy?
It really depends the strategy that you're going with your team. He was available to me earlier tonight on a few of my teams, and my biggest strategy this year across my teams was punting assists. So I just left him there. I don't need a guy that's going to get me, 8, 9 assists a game or whatever even it may be when I'm not going to be winning assists regardless. So, and because he's not offering points or threes or steals or much else, it's a waste of a spot to me. But if you're in a situation where you do need assists, yeah, I think you got to add him for now for sure. In a roto league, certainly any sort of bulk of assists can help even at the end of the season if you end up dropping him. But people need to realize that Kendall Marshall will be back at some point. Yeah. Tony Rotten will be back at some point. And the way Philly has run their organization in the last few years is they like to save money. And unfortunately, they are paying Kendall Marshall and Tony Rotten guaranteed money, and they're not going to be paying guys a couple million dollars and not having them play. So McConnell should continue to get minutes when those guys come back, but it's not going to be 35 minutes a game. It'll probably be in the 17 to 20 minute range. And with that kind of minutes, he's going to be not very valuable in any fantasy league. So add him now if you need the assist, but I wouldn't be giving up too much because a month down the line, he may be reduced to nothing.
I really enjoy the fact that you call him Tony Rotten. I don't know if you're doing it deliberately or not. The fact that, that's a great nickname for him because he is rotten when he plays. He's a disgusting basketball player.
Did I mispronounce? Is it Rotten?
It's Rotten, yeah. But I'm happy to stick with Rotten. I'm very happy to see that. He is my least favorite player. He's my least favorite player in the NBA. TJ McConnell, same thing with me. Yes, short term, you might get 2 weeks worth out of him, and that might give you a stack of assists. But watch who you're dropping. I've seen a lot of people out there, do I drop Jarrett Jack for TJ McConnell? And yes, Jarrett Jack is not great, but by the end of the season, Jarrett Jack should have way more value than what TJ McConnell does. I would be shocked if he didn't, because Rotten's going to come back. Marshall's going to be there. They just signed Phil Pressey as well as another point guard. Isaiah Cannon is going to get maybe some time. Who knows what they're going to do? TJ McConnell is not going to play 35 minutes a night moving forward. If he does, look, there's a small chance that he does. I think it's pretty small, and I don't really think that's what's going to happen. But it depends who you drop. I think that's the main point. Don't drop anyone of great value because, yeah, you might get 3 weeks out of him, and you might get 3 weeks at decent minutes with a decent return, and that can be useful. But just watch who you're dropping. Don't drop a long-term sort of guy. David Lee, fine, drop him. You know, add TJ McConnell. Myers Leonard, you can drop him to add TJ. Obviously, these are different stat sets, and that's another thing that comes into consideration when you're talking about those sort of moves. You know, do I drop Myers Leonard for TJ McConnell? Well, it depends. Can you afford to lose a block and six rebounds and whatever, and you know, two threes a game for an exchange in assists? It's not just a straight swap, so you need to pay attention to that. But let's just every case is obviously individual about who you're dropping with McConnell. Jeremy Grant got the start in place of Robert Covington, who is out again for another couple of weeks with his injured knee sprain. Did it in practice, which is not a great sign for him. Covington is a guy with top 60 upside. Do you want to still hold on to him? I'm still holding him. I've got him in a 10-team and a 12-team league, and I'm still holding him.
Yes.
Yep, cool. Good answer. Jeremy Grant, 8-7 for him in the start in place of Covington, and four blocks. You know, he's not going to continually do that, so he's not a great guy for 12-team leagues. Nerlens Noel, 17-12. And Nick Stauskas took 19 field goal attempts, went 14-7, four assists, three threes. He's not going to shoot 26% very often. The fact that he was so involved, he played 35 minutes, he is the man at shooting guard for this team. He is going to handle the ball a lot. He is a guy that I think you need to own in pretty much all 12-team leagues at this point. Would you agree with that?
I agree with that.
He's putting up some pretty decent numbers, and it's good to see him out of it. And it's weird to say when you go to Philadelphia that you're going into a better situation, but he has gone into a better situation leaving the Sacramento Kings. The Bucks. We saw the return of Jabari Parker, his first game back from ACL surgery. Yep, not surprisingly, he wasn't good. 2 points and four rebounds in 16 minutes. He's going to be on these minutes limit for quite a while. He's going to sit back-to-backs. If he's sitting on your waiver wire, I don't think there's a rush to grab him, because even when he comes back, I don't think he's going to become a top 50 player this season or a top 70 player. He might hover around that top 100 value, and holding a guy to give you top 100 value in a month's time, I don't think that's the greatest strategy in the world. In a deeper league, yes, you sort of have to do that because top 100 becomes mid-round. But in a 10-team league, if you're grabbing Jabari Parker and waiting it out for the next month, I don't really like that strategy. How do you see it?
Yeah, I agree with you. He wasn't, fantasy-wise, wasn't very good last year. And that was in 30 minutes.
He was okay, but not great.
Yeah, he was average. 12 points. A little more than a steal, six rebounds, doesn't make three-pointers, doesn't block shots, doesn't really get to the line a ton, and when he does, only shot slightly below 70%. And that was in 30 minutes per game. That was before he had tore his ACL. So, and that was before they added Greg Monroe. And so, yeah, it's it was a guy that was better off holding when you had him in your IR spot, but now if you have to ride him on your bench, wait it out, see maybe his minutes increase faster than we hope. But other than that, he's a guy that I don't think is going to provide a ton of value this year.
No, agree with that. Chris Middleton with a big game, 21 and three threes. And Giannis Antetokounmpo had his first sub-20-point scoring game, but still had a triple one with five rebounds and three assists. Greg Monroe, 18 and eight with four assists and three steals. And Antetokounmpo and Monroe look like they're going to be pretty comfortably inside the top 50 this season. Michael Carter-Williams sat out, so Jared Bayless got the start. Played less minutes than what he did the other day against the Nets. 5-4-3, so a bit of a dud. Everyone who went out and added him into their DFS lineup, it was the right move to do. It just didn't pay off, especially after what we saw from him against the Nets. Definitely didn't pay off in this matchup for Jared Bayless and for all his owners. The next game, the Brooklyn Nets and the Atlanta Hawks. The Brooklyn Nets, they are very, very close to the worst team in the NBA. 27-11 for Brook Lopez with a block. That's more like it from Brook. pretty decent night from Thad Young as well, 14 and 10 with a steal and a block. And there is a whole bunch of nothing from most of these other guys. Jarrett Jack, 6-4 and 5. That is not a good night for him. But as I mentioned before with TJ McConnell, I think he's going to be a pretty decent guy for most of the season, a 14 and 6 sort of guy. I think he's probably the right spot for Jarrett Jack. Is there anything of any interest to you on the Nets? Are they the most boring team to watch in the NBA?
They're really bad, yeah. They may be the most boring. There may be a couple other teams that are worse, but not as boring. One thing I can say about Jack is I think that hamstring's still an issue. So yeah. If you're in a deeper league, might not be a terrible guy to try to buy on if you're in need of a little assist. Just know that you're not going to get a ton of threes. You're not going to get a ton of steals. But I think he's rushing back from that hamstring injury.
The Markel Brown starting shooting guard experiment continues. For what reason? I've got literally no idea. 20 minutes for him, 6 points with 2 threes and 2 steals. Bojan Bogdanović outplayed him for the third game in a row in 25 minutes off the bench. Just give Bojan Bogdanović 30 minutes. Brown doesn't need to be playing basically at all. I don't know why he's playing. He's not an NBA-caliber player. This is not an NBA-caliber team, but he shouldn't be starting over a guy like Bogdanović, who was red hot to end last season and could become a pretty decent option on this team, one of their go-to scorers. But Lionel Hollins apparently is a good coach.
I think he's just wants a scorer off the bench is all that I read out of that.
No one scores on this team. His starting lineup doesn't have any scorers. Jarrett Jack's not a scorer. Brook Lopez is their only scorer. He doesn't have a scorer in the starting lineup. So you'd want a scorer to play 30 minutes, I would have thought, and not give bullshit 20 minutes to Markel Brown that in the end means nothing. Lionel Hollins is going to get fired this season. I am pretty confident of it. He has just made some baffling decisions the last couple of seasons. The Hawks, Al Horford continues at a torrid pace, 21-8-4 with 2 blocks and a three. Paul Millsap, 12-9, 5 steals and a three. He's the best. He's probably the second best big man in terms of steals behind Nerlens Noel, and he's giving him a fair shake. Both of these guys, perennially underrated and putting up big numbers. What do you make of Kent Bazemore? Underwhelming with 8 points, but 2 threes, 3 rebounds, 3 assists, 3 steals, and 2 blocks is superb. Are you owning him in 12 team leagues?
I am. I'm owning him in all 12 team leagues.
It's really hard for me because I don't think he's a good player. I don't think he's good at all, but he's getting opportunity. He's putting up some nice numbers. You pretty much can't not own him at this point. If something changes, it changes. Dennis Schroeder got the start in place of Kyle Korver, who was out with that ankle rehab plan that he's got going. 20 points for Schroeder, 3 threes, 4 assists, a steal. When you know he's going to play, he puts up big numbers, but when he's off the bench, he's getting 16 minutes. He's not ownable. Therefore, I'm not owning him in 12-team leagues. Are you?
It depends. It depends how deep the 12-team league is. If it's a 15 roster spots. League, what's that?
If you have 15 roster spots in a 12-team league, I'm okay with it.
Yeah, definitely. But, if you have 15 roster spots, yes. But if it's 13 borderline, more of a – I mean, like the Hawks have a few quality games this week. So, they're a team that I've been, picking up guys this week because they fill my spots. They fill up my game volume, but other than that, he's not a guy that I'm going to ride out the rest of the season.
Yeah, I agree with that. And the weirdest stat of the whole day is Justin Holiday getting 4 blocks. That will probably be close to his season total in one game, so don't read anything to that. Also, Tim Hardaway, he may be legally dead. We have yet to see him play, even with guys like Thabo Sefolosha sitting out, Kyle Korver sitting out. Hardaway, he is trash as a player, but to give away Jerry and Grant in order to get him seems like one of the worst moves from the guy who was the executive of the year last year. Oh, no, he wasn't. No, he was coach of the year, sorry. Mike Budenholzer, who's now the GM. Was he executive of the year as well?
Danny Ferry was.
There you go. Whoever's making that decision to get Tim Hardaway, it wasn't Danny Ferry, but not a great move because he's not a good player. We knew he wasn't a good player. We thought, maybe the Hawks can work some magic. No, they can't. He is not good, and he continues to be not good. On the other scale of not good, Seth, Evan Fournier, 46 minutes for Fournier, 29 points, 3 threes, 6 rebounds, 4 assists, 1 steal. Everybody needs to bow to the altar of Evan Fournier. Don't Google. He is putting up some just crazy, crazy numbers. There is in no situation do you not own him at this point. Yes, he will regress, but Yeah, I've said it for 3 years. I reckon he is a fantastic player. I'm massively high on Evan Fournier, and I've been saying it for a long time, and finally it's being realized. How, on your scale of 1 to 10, how far above 10 are you on your love for Evan Fournier?
Whatever your love is, subtract a few.
Cool. But you do have to own him, don't you? He is just tearing it apart.
Yeah, right? Yeah. He's must own right now. Like you said, he's going to regress, obviously, but as long as he's starting and as long as he's playing pretty much the whole game, well, this went to overtime, but
he's averaging 39 minutes a game.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. and you got to own him. There's no reason he should be available in any leagues. I think he's like still 70% available or something in the ESPN leagues.
He needs to be owned. He's averaging 20.5 points, 2 threes, 5 rebounds, 3 assists, 1.5 steals, and shooting 48%. And you might go, you know what, he's 48% is not realistic, but Seth, the last 3 months of last year, he shot 47%. The last 2 months, he shot 49%, sorry. So it's not like that he's been a 42% shooter his career. Yes, his last year in Denver, he shot 42. The year before, he shot 49. He's a pretty high field goal percentage guard. He got going last year. He dealt with a lot of hip issues. He has to be owned. He's not going to continue 20 points and 39 minutes a game. I'm fairly confident. And I'm fairly confident he's not going to end the season as the 35th best fantasy player, which he's currently ranked. But inside the top 100 is clearly within reach for him. Victor Oladipo, 18-7-3 with 2 steals. Nick Vucevic went down with a knee issue. They're calling it a knee sprain. Much like Robert Covington, we don't know if he's going to miss any time. He's considered questionable at the moment. He played just 17 minutes. There's nothing we do with Vucevic if he gets injured. You don't drop him at this point. It doesn't appear to be a months-long injury. It might be a week or 2 weeks. But who benefits? Is it Aaron Gordon, who played 32 minutes and went 19-8 in a block? Is it Dwayne Dedman, who played 26 minutes and went 4-7 with 2 steals and 2 blocks? I'm adding, out of those two guys, I'm adding Gordon. Which way do you lean?
Yeah, I mean, you have to add Gordon. He's the better player than Dedman. But I do think that Dedman directly benefits more just because he's a center. And yep. Unless they go super, super small and start, you know, combining Jason Smith and Dedman, you know, off the bench, I think Dedman starts getting a lot of minutes. He can be a provider of block shots. Obviously, Gordon should be added. And I think Gordon's probably owned in most leagues anyway, although that after his last 2 games, someone might have dropped him. But we don't know how long Vucevic will be out. At least a few games, but if he comes back, we may see Gordon go back to that, you know, 10-15 minute game per game like he has been for the last week.
Well, the other thing here is that, yes, okay, Vucevic goes out. Is Aaron Gordon going to play center? I don't think so. He's not big enough to play center. No. So he doesn't directly benefit from Vucevic going out. Gordon got 32 minutes here because Tobias Harris played just 21, and he was benched for stretches of the game. So Gordon was able to get more minutes that way. Dedman is the main beneficiary, I agree. Now, Gordon's the better fantasy option. Maybe he sees a 5-minute boost, but he doesn't get a massive boost. He doesn't get 30 minutes a night unless it's at the expense of Toby Harris. It's not going to be in place of Nick Vucevic. He can't play center. He's not – and look, Skiles might do it. It'd be pretty crazy to me. But he can't play center. He's not going to absorb all of Vucevic's minutes. So, yes, adding him's fine, but I don't think that he's going to take up, you know, he's not going to play 32 minutes unless they put Harris into a smaller role, which is possible. Given what we've seen from Gordon the last couple of games, you'd have to think that it's going to be a little bit hard for him to get those 30 minutes, even with Vucevic out. But I'm all for adding him. For the Rockets, your boy Trevor Ariza went for 19-7 with 4 threes and 3 steals. A lot of people were very down on Ariza in the last couple of games. I did tell you, just relax. This guy's going to be fine, and he was good. If someone dropped him, you obviously had to add him. The Rockets are still going with that weird lineup of starting Marcus Thornton in place of Terrence Jones, and Thornton has been really good. 18 points and 2 threes. That's 3 big games in a row for Thornton. We don't know how long. Terrence Jones' injury sounds so disgusting. Have you heard the details of it?
I heard something about the stitches were bothering his eyes. They had to take the stitches out. I didn't hear much more than that.
He had a cut on the inside of his eyelid. The inside of his eyelid was cut open. That sounds so disgusting, and I could see why it would definitely impact your vision. It would just be constantly like pressing against your eyeball like an open cut. That sounds so disgusting. And you think, oh, he's got a cut on his eye. Well, who is this guy? Get out there and play. Look, and this is not a cut across his eyebrow or on the side of his head. This is a cut inside his eyelid that's split open. That is not a pleasant experience for Terrence Jones, who's probably the king of the weird injuries in the NBA at the moment. Had that injury where he couldn't feel his legs for 3 months last year, then had a punctured lung, and now has cut open the inside of his eyelid. Not dropping Terrence Jones anywhere, are you?
No.
No, you have to hold on to him. Ty Lawson with a pretty good game, 16-4-8, a good performance from him. Patrick Beverley was limited with an illness, played just 12 minutes. And James Harden, super inefficient, like disgustingly inefficient, 27% on 22 attempts, but still 28-7-4 with 2 threes. The counting stats were still there. The next game on the slate, the Sacramento Kings and the Phoenix Suns. Costa Kufos, 16-7 with 2 blocks in 28 minutes. Willie Cauley-Stein, 16 minutes, 0 points, 4 rebounds, and 1 block. This is what I was cautioning people about, who everyone was on the let's add Willie Cauley-Stein everywhere train, and I wasn't. And this is why, because A, he's not that good, and B, he's going to have nights where he doesn't play, and they're going to run small lineups. They're going to play Gay at the four. They're going to play Omri Caspi at the four and run other centers out there. And Cauley-Stein's not that good. I don't think that he's a must-own in 12-team leagues by any stretch. He was clearly outplayed by Kufos tonight. Kufos is only going to have value while Cousins is out. What do you make of this Cauley-Stein thing? Are you on board the Willie Cauley-Stein train?
No, I'm not, and I actually agree completely with you. I had an article come out today, a DFS article, where I was highlighting some of the top value plays tonight, and I one of them was Kufos.
Yeah,
and
he was the number one guy on the board, I reckon.
Yeah, and I specifically said I would much rather have him than Willie Cauley-Stein. Everyone saw that one huge game that was against the Lakers.
Exactly.
I mean, everyone does well against the Lakers. We watched Willie Cauley-Stein in college. Yeah, he did well against college competition, but this is not an offensively gifted player at this point. He's better defense. And like you said, without Cousins, they're running smaller. He's not really a guy I'd ever look to own in seasonal, 12-team leagues the rest of the season, unless, they're totally out of it at the end, which they could be, and they start to, play in more minutes because they want to get some experience, or there's just a ton of injuries. But yeah, he's not a guy that you should be owning in 12-team leagues.
No, I agree with that. James Anderson got the start, played 25 minutes out of nowhere, 15 points, 4 threes, 2 steals. There, let's just leave that for what it is. I don't think we need to do anything with James Anderson. It moved Ben McLemore to a completely irrelevant role, and that's where he's going to stay, it looks like, for this season. Darren Collison got the start, which was great. They moved Rudy Gay. This is an odd lineup. They moved Kufos to the bench, and they played Collison, Rondo, James Anderson at the three, Gay at the four, and Cauley-Stein at center, and then played Kufos, all those minutes, Bellinelli more minutes. It was just a completely upside-down lineup in Sacramento. They got smashed again. They're really, really bad at the moment. Obviously, they're missing their best player and one of the best players in the league, but there's just some strange lineup decisions being made there, and we don't need to read too much into this James Anderson situation. What about the Suns? Eric Bledsoe continues to be great, 19-6-8 with 4 steals, a block, and 2 threes. From memory, I had him close to a top 15 player at the start of the season, and he's been awesome. Brandon Knight's also great, 17-7 with some big three numbers. TJ Warren, 13 points, 4 rebounds, 2 assists, outplayed PJ Tucker again. PJ Tucker doesn't have to be owned anywhere, pretty much, Seth, but what's your take on Warren?
I still think right now he can be left on the waiver wire in 12-team leagues, but I think he was a guy I was really high on in the beginning of the season. I drafted him in one of the leagues that we're in together, but he just doesn't have a well-rounded fantasy game. He's a good player, I think, in real life, and I think as the season goes along, I think Tucker will start getting less minutes and Warren will get more. But right now, he doesn't really hit a lot of threes. He's not going to impress you with rebounds or steals, and the numbers just really aren't there to warrant owning him in under 14-team leagues.
Yeah, I think that's pretty accurate. I can't see anything more than that. I'm not adding him in 12-team leagues at this point. Good to see a big game from Alex Len, 16-7. He's just a watch guy for the time being. They were smashing the Kings, so Chandler only had to play 26 minutes, but Len's a guy that you know that I love his potential. and he showed why tonight. So it was a good outing from Alex Len. Next up, the Portland Trail Blazers and the Utah Jazz. Portland ran a really, really small rotation, only 9 guys. He talked about Myers Leonard already. Mason Plumlee had a game that rewarded the people who drafted him. 12-16, 2 steals and 2 blocks. And it also highlighted why he had to be a punt free throw guy, 2 of 9 from the free throw line. So it was good to see him get out there and do those sort of numbers, because people had been waiting for that. Al-Farouq Aminu, 13-8 with 2 steals and a 3. This is real, isn't it, for Al-Farouq Aminu?
He's a guy I was really high on this year. Was in all of my sleeper, lists. I drafted him on a bunch of teams. He was always just waiting to break out. And it wasn't that he didn't get the minutes, really. He was getting okay minutes in New Orleans. He just wasn't getting the ball. And he's improved his three-point shot. He's blocking shots. He's stealing the ball. He's getting a ton of minutes. He's the unquestioned starter there. And, he has a very well-rounded fantasy game and can contribute in a number of categories. It could be very similar. The three-point shooting won't be as good, but very similar to what a Danny Green-type player can offer, where he's going to give you a block, a little more than a steal, maybe a little more than 1-3, scoring, rebounding. It's all there, and he's a fun guy to watch, and it'll be a fun guy to own.
CJ McCollum was red hot from the field. He had 27 points on 77% shooting, while Damian Lillard went 35, 4, and 3 on 52% himself. So both big games from both of those guns in the backcourt there. Rudy Gobert, this is a stock standard Gobert game. 8-9 with 4 blocks. Missed both of his free throw attempts. He's bad at free throws. He doesn't score. He gets rebounds. He blocks shots. He shoots a high field goal percentage. It is what it is for Gobert. Gordon Hayward, the stinker continues. 19 points, but nothing else, and some really bad inefficiency. What the hell is going on with Gordon Hayward, and do you think it continues?
I just don't know. I don't know. He's too good of a player for this. He just seems like the confidence may not be there because he's just not shooting the ball well or doing really anything well. He's going to turn that around. He's too good of a player. He's a young guy. Definitely a good buy low moment.
Yeah, massive buy low moment on him. Trey Burke has really sort of got the ascendancy over Howell Neto, 17 points for Burke. He's not a guy you want to must own anywhere, but Neto's a guy you don't want to own anywhere. Derek Favors played through an illness, went 6-10 with 4 steals and 2 blocks. And Rodney Hood had 10 points, while Alec Burks chipped in with 21 points in 32 minutes off the bench. Last game of the night is a game we referenced earlier, the Clippers and the Warriors. Chris Paul, 24, 3, and 9 with 3 steals. He dealt with a little bit of a leg problem at the moment. Not many details have come out about that at this point. And Blake Griffin went 23, 10, and 6. So big games from their stars. DeAndre Jordan, 11 and 13 with 2 blocks. And JJ Redick, 13 points. As usual, Lance Stevenson provided nothing, as did the bench. And the Warriors, there was a bit of a breakout from Harrison Barnes. 17, 9, and 3 with 2 threes. Are you buying into that at all?
No, not this particular game. I mean, he had a good matchup. The Clippers are very favorable against small forwards. These guys just don't play defense. So
Stevenson's
What's that?
Stevenson's not good.
No, Stevenson's not good. Paul Pierce is old and slow. It's just not a good combination. I do like what Barnes has been doing this year. He's had very decent across the board production. Nothing that wows you, but again, it's so hard. This was actually the first real game we got to see the Golden State Warriors as the real Golden State Warriors, because every other game they've been blowing everybody out. Yep. Thompson's getting 21 minutes. We have, all their bench guys in. This was the first game where we saw legit minutes for their starters and sort of a good gauge, though I certainly don't think Harrison Barnes is going to be scoring 17 and getting 9 rebounds every night, but he could certainly prove a little bit on last year's totals.
Yep. Seth, that's it for the games from Wednesday. We'll take a short break, gather our thoughts as we transition over to Thursday's games. I saw your picture today. Got me thinking about the things that I would say. But I know you're happy now when you're someplace far away. Away, away, away. And I can't remember. now, Seth, you've had plenty of time to transition your brain over to Thursday's action. We've got five games to cover. Let's get through these games pretty quickly and see what we can gather for our listeners here. The first game up on the slate is the Miami Heat and the Minnesota Timberwolves. The Heat are favored by 3.5, pretty low over under of 198. Is there anything that really stands out to you in this game from a daily fantasy point of view?
No, not really. I mean, I really like the Heat big men in this one. I like Bosch. I like Whiteside. And on the other end, and you know, I'll discuss it later in my top three players each position. A guy I talked about early in Gorgui Dieng, I like him a lot at his price, and I think they're going to need him to defend Whiteside and those guys. I certainly don't think Bielitsa, is that how you pronounce it? Bielitsa. Bielitsa. Yeah, I don't think he can defend Bosch or any of those guys that they're going to bring down in the post. So I think you're going to see a lot of Dieng.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think Dieng is at 4,500. Yes, he's a little bit more expensive than Bielitsa, but I do think that he's a pretty decent value play for a GPP sort of thing. You probably don't want to play him in a cash game format, but I think that he is a nice price guy. I really like Karl Anthony Towns at 6,600 as well. He was a little bit down against the Blazers, but he showed some, not even great flashes. He's been great to start the season. I think that's a pretty decent price for him. I don't really like much in terms of the Heat guys. I think Hassan Whiteside at 8,000. Is maybe a little bit expensive. I don't hate it though. I think that he can put up some pretty decent value. He's already had a 50-point game this season, but at 8,000, he's going to need to give you, he's going to need to give you 40 plus to even come close to breaking even, which he's only averaging 36 on the season. He can get close to that. Ricky Rubio, don't love him in this sort of a slower paced environment, although he has been really good so far this season. And I'm definitely not looking at Andrew Wiggins, who's had a real slow start to his second season so far. Do you have any idea what's going on with Andrew Wiggins or any insight, or is this sort of what you expected from him?
No, this is what I've expected. I didn't understand people that were overly excited about him this year, and is certainly a great talent. It's going to be a very good player in the league, but he's just not a well-rounded fantasy player. He's not shooting the ball well. There's going to be big games. He's going to have big games, but I was not buying the hype. I avoided him everywhere I could this year.
Yep, you and me both. The next game we look at is the Chicago Bulls and the Oklahoma City Thunder. There is no spread or line out for this one, no totals out either. Injury-wise, there's not really much for us to pay attention to here, thankfully. We have Nikola Mirotic still priced at 6,000. He was really poor in the last game. I reckon that is still a great price for him. What do you make of Russell Westbrook at 10,800 and Kevin Durant at 10,000? Which one of those two are you spending your big money on?
It's always... it's like you're asking me to pick between two supermodels. Yeah. I guess I'll go with Durant and save the 800.
Okay, no, I go the other way here. Again, with the Bulls, they haven't been great against opposing point guards, so I think that he'd be a pretty decent play. Westbrook, he's always going to put up pretty big numbers. Even today, he put up 48. Yeah, 10,800 for him is a decent price. 8,000 for Jimmy Butler, not a bad price, but again, he needs to go at 40 points to really return significant value, and his highest score this season is just 41, so he's not quite at that consistent 40-point level yet. I liked it a lot when he was under 8,000, not so much at that price. And Pau Gasol at 77 is not a great option for me, nor is Derrick Rose at 6,900. Not much else really stands out to me in this game. Joakim Noah, no thank you very much. Tony Snell, equally no thank you, even though he is just $100 over the minimum. An intriguing guy to me is Steven Adams at 4,200. He had a really big performance today, and that's a cheap price. I don't love it. What do you think of Adams?
It's funny because I not in DFS, but in seasonal, I added him across the board on every single one of my teams because he was playing Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, like every day that I needed guys. Yep. And, of course I dropped him on all my teams before today and he came out with the four blocks, but, for the price, certainly a punt. As a center down there.
Yep. The next game we have a look at, Seth, the Charlotte Hornets and the Dallas Mavericks. Cody Zeller had his face busted open the other day. He did return to the game. He's likely going to play. So otherwise, not much to talk about in terms of guys that aren't playing. But Chandler Parsons is going to be limited still to first half minutes. He expects to play about 16 minutes in tomorrow's game, or whichever day it is, Thursday's game. He expects to play about 16 minutes. That doesn't mean, obviously, we need to look at him from a daily fantasy perspective, but how does it affect other guys? I think Ray Felton, he's still at 3,900. He's had some big games this year. I don't think that he's going to be completely limited in his minutes. He still get 20 to 25 minutes when Parsons sits in that second half. And at 3,900, he's a decent punt option. Marvin Williams has been really solid, apart from the last game, that blowout of the Bulls at 4,800. Do you like him? And that's a bad question about Marvin Williams.
Yeah, I like Marvin Williams as long as that price is there. I mean, he's performing very well this season. You can't argue with that. And Dallas isn't a great defensive team. So, yeah, I like him.
I'll tell you what's interesting to me is that Marvin Williams has had this great start to the season. Cody Zeller, I think a lot of people would say, has been pretty poor. DFS-wise, Marvin Williams is averaging 23.86 and Cody Zeller 19.19. Yeah, that's not that different. Zeller you get for 3,900. So the difference between what they're able to do in the massive difference in minutes, like a 5-6 minutes difference between what they're averaging, is it's advantage Zeller. And if for some reason, which I hope, he gets more minutes, he's a guy I really like. For now, he's more of a tournament sort of option. Zaza Pachulia has been pretty steady. He was quiet in the last game, but he's been fairly rock solid at 5,000. I don't hate him as a player. What's your take on Zaza? There's literally no other centers in Dallas.
Yeah, he's a safe play, although he's listed at power forward, but I like Powell a lot tonight.
Look, Powell at 4,000, he was great in the last game. He's had some pretty solid. He's averaging 22.8 in 22 minutes. He's a guy that I was really high on in the offseason at 4,000. I'm definitely okay with putting him in there in a tournament, because if he drops 30, you're looking pretty good. Al Jefferson, I'm not relying upon him. Same with Darren Williams, even though he looked pretty okay in the last game. And what about Dirk at 6,600? He's had some pretty big games lately. Do you think that he's worth a look at that price?
I do. I think he is worth it with the slate tonight.
And is there any chance that Jeremy Lamb goes 9 of 10 again from the field?
No, I don't think so. But if you are looking for a cheaper option from the point guard position, he's a guy I'd definitely be looking at.
Yeah, he's at 4,300. So there's a little bit of value there. I'm definitely not expecting him to shoot 9 of 10 from the field like he did against the Bulls. The next game, the Utah Jazz and the Denver Nuggets are up on the board. Rodney Hood at 4,500 was a little bit quiet today, but he still put up 20 points. So at 4,500, that's not bad value. At some point, Gordon Hayward has to turn it around. He's still priced at under 7,000, and I'm just going to keep playing him until something gives. I think that you still got to, at 7,800, or 6,800, sorry, I think that's really good value for Hayward, or unless something is just completely broken with him. He has to break out soon, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. And you know, the shooting's not there, but 19 points tonight or last night is certainly season high. So he's going in the right direction. And like you said, 6,800. I have it at 6,800, but that price is hard to pass up.
Derek Favors, and this is dependent on his sort of status. He had to battle an illness and he played 25 minutes. If he gets back to 30 minutes at $8,000, I love it. Even in his 25 minutes, he put up over 30 fantasy points today. But if he gets back to playing 30, 32 minutes at 8,000, I think that's a really good high price play. He's been fantastic. Let's just wait to see if we hear any more news on his injury. We don't know what's happening with the Denver front court, and that's another reason why Favors could be in for a big night. Lavernier might not play. Jokic might not play. So Favors might actually get matched up against Danilo Gallinari or against JJ Hickson. And either one of those, he should be able to destroy both of those guys. Even if it's only Kenneth Faried there. Faried is not a good defender, and Favors will destroy him. So that's someone to watch out for, but we need to find out more information about his injury and how he's feeling and all that sort of stuff. Rudy Gobert at 8,100, that's a no-go zone for me. Are you there, Seth?
Yeah.
What's your take on Gobert at 8,100?
Yeah, it's a little much for me. I'd almost rather, if I'm going for center, I'd almost rather go with Al Jefferson, who's a guy you didn't like, but I like him more than Favors. This game could be a real blowout, and I don't see him getting a lot of minutes down the stretch.
Last game is Memphis and Portland, and there's not a lot that really stands out to me here. CJ McCollum's at 6,400, so there's a little bit of value there. Damian Lillard, if you want to go for a big price guy at 8,900, has been putting up some pretty decent numbers, but he's only averaging 40.6. So if he gets 40.6, that's not quite enough at that almost $9,000 price tag. Mason Plumlee had a bit of a breakout, and at 5,100, I think he's a value guy. And same with Al-Farouq Aminu at 57. I think they're both pretty decent. Anything else you really want to look at from this game, apart from Marc Gasol's injury? So if Gasol's out, we definitely look at Brandon Wright, don't we?
Yeah, you got to look at Brandon Wright down there, and even Jermichael Green.
Yeah, he's been a real surprise this year.
Yeah, he has. I think... Memphis keeps playing the way they have. I think you may see some changes. That it might be one of those teams that we've seen getting a little off track here. We've seen Memphis get to the Western Conference Finals. We've seen them play well every year, and they just can't take that next step. And at some point, I think they need to reevaluate their game plan. Yeah. Of this, you know, they're really one of the few teams left that runs a slow defensive pace. And not that defense wins, but you need a combination like Golden State, that good defense, great offense, sometimes great defense as well. But the way they play is just old fashioned, and they have zero bench. They have no shooters. That's not going to be winning NBA championships. And I think a guy like Jermichael Green will start to see more minutes if they decide to go and, with more youth and more energetic fashion.
Yeah, he's definitely been a bit of a surprise this season. Now, Seth, let's have a look at our best players at each position. You can see mine up on the screen. At point guard, I've got as a cheap option Ray Felton, Mike Conley as a mid-range guy, and then Westbrook as an expensive player. Who are your three point guard options you're looking at?
I went with, for the cheapest, I went with Jeremy Lin. I just didn't really see anybody below him that, you know, I can count on. For the mid-range, I went with Trey Burke. Nuggets are the fifth worst team versus yep. opposing point guards, and they just gave up 30 points to Jordan Clarkson. And for my higher-priced ones, I went with Ricky Rubio. You can almost guarantee he's going to get a handful of assists, rebounds, points, and a cheaper option if you're looking to not go with Russell Westbrook.
At shooting guard, I've gone with a couple of Jazz guys, Rodney Hood at 45, Alec Burks at 54, and Jimmy Butler at 8,000. As much as I didn't love him before, there's not many other high-priced shooting guards that are going to be worth looking at, so I'm probably avoiding that high-priced shooting guard price in today's games. How did you look at your shooting guards?
I went with Hood also, and for the mid-range guys, if Wade does play, I like him. If not, McCollum, and I also went with Jimmy Butler.
Yeah, but I said it before, I don't really love playing Butler at that price, but there's not many there. Now, and small forwards, I've got Justice Winslow there at 3,600. He's put up some okay numbers. It's only if you go stack really high in a tournament and go, okay, I'm going to get a minimum price guy. If Wade is out, that's sort of where I'm looking at Winslow there, because he'll have to get some more minutes and maybe be a little bit more involved, but I'm not recommending it in every situation. Mirotić at 6,000 I love, and Kevin Durant at 10,000 is pretty self-explanatory. How did you look at it?
I went with... Doug McDermott as my cheap guy.
Yep.
Went with Gordon Hayward and then Kevin Durant.
For power forwards, Marvin Williams, we touched on before, 4,800. I got Dirk at 66, I think is a decent play. And Derek Favors, again, it depends on what we hear about his illness and sort of the status of that Denver front court as well as to whether he's worth it. But at 8,000, if he's full and ready to go, I think that he can easily exceed that. Where are your power forwards at?
I went with Dwight Powell, Dirk, and Pau Gasol.
And then at center, a couple of guys we touched on already. Gorgui Dieng at 4,800. Karl Anthony Towns at 66. And Hassan Whiteside, Hassan Shaquille Whiteside at 8,000. How did you put your guys there?
I went with Dieng, Jefferson, and Whiteside.
Cool. Seth, we are done. It was a long show. We had a lot to talk about. Thank you for staying up and talking with me. Remind everyone quickly where they can find you on Twitter.
You can find me at Seth Da Sportsman, SethDaSportsman. Follow me there. I answer all your questions. I guess follow my writing at the Fantasy Fix, Fantasy Draft, Fantasy Guru.
I need to make a graphic for you. I'm going to make a graphic for you to put up on the screen.
And my rankings, of course, on Fantasy Pros.
Cool. Seth, thank you for that. And follow me on Twitter at redrock_beeble. Remember, get yourself in and sponsor the podcast by leaving a review on iTunes. So thank you to everyone who has done that. The reviews are flowing in thick and fast. I want them to keep going. I want to be overwhelmed where I have to have three people sponsoring each podcast. The response has been fantastic. So thank you, everyone, and keep them coming in as best as you can. 5 games tomorrow. Don't forget to challenge me on moneyball.com.au for some daily fantasy action. Good luck with everyone, with everyone's team and daily fantasy team for tomorrow. Seth, thank you.
Thank you very much, and I appreciate you not making me attempt my Australian accent tonight.
That's coming. It's, you know what? If I do it, I'm going to build it up. I need to tweet it out in advance. I'm going to get.
I think so.
You know what I'm going to do? This is what we'll do. The next time you come on, when we work that out, you're going to do it. But I'm also going to get listeners to send me recordings of them doing it. I'm going to put together a collage, and we're going to see who has the best one. So that's
fair enough.
So everyone listening, if you've got an Australian accent, assuming you're not from Australia, so don't try to pull a shifty one on me. If you're not from Australia, practice your Australian accents, get them together, and you can compete with Seth for the winner of the funniest Australian accent. Or sorry, the best Australian accent. That's what we'll be judging. The best Australian accent. Now, Seth, thank you. It's been great having you on.
Thanks again. I always enjoy being on the show.
Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.